Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Welcome, everybody, to another week at The Damage Report. I am Francesca Fiorentini in for John Iadarola, who's still being the best dad ever. Really happy to have you guys here. It is a fantastic Monday. And because of that, Senator Nina Turner joins me once again. Senator, how you doing?
I am doing fine, Francesca. Glad to be here on this fantastic Monday.
Yes, I'm so glad I have you here, because although we kind of build each other up, I feel like we both get angry, obviously, at the right things. John is always like a calming, you know, presence.
Yes.
So I feel like we're gonna get very passionate today, because there's a lot of. Look, we usually just have a one Monday menace. We have a few, not official Monday menaces, but there's some menaces lurking in the rundown. I'm sure you guys can guess who. We're gonna talk about the UAW strike. We are also going to get into what religious conservatives, what the evangelical right is thinking and doing. Are people still religious who vote Republican? Interesting stats around church attendance. And then just ghouls, nothing but ghouls. And then maybe an interesting story about doing something when black people and black children especially go missing. Turns out we don't actually look for them in the same ways that we do white people and white children. But we'll get into all that. For now, you know what to do, guys. Don't act brand new. You're liking the stream right now. You're sharing the stream right now. You're sending in the super chats, okay? Because just because John's gone doesn't mean I'm not gonna be reading them and celebrating all y'all. So let's get together here on this. We're getting through this, guys. It's Monday. Let's do this. It's gonna be a good week. Last week, not gonna lie, kinda hated it. This week, gonna be different, gonna change up the energy with something completely predictable. Okay, so let's get in. So fool me once, shame on me. No, sorry. Let's not do the George W. Bush. Guys, I'm starting this show off really good. Start the B-roll over of this disgusting man. Fool me once, shame on you. But fool me 300 times and I must be the US media covering Donald Trump during election season. That's right, Meet the Press of NBC News, now under the helm of Kristen Welker, sat down with Donald J. Trump and what can only be described as a incredibly softball interview. They're at it again, people. We're filming empty podiums, let's go. Here was the very first little clip that caught our eye on how little Kristen Welker pushed back when Donald Trump just openly spouted lies. Take a look.
You are facing four indictments, 91 felony charges.
If you would say it properly, I'm facing four Biden indictments. He told the Justice Department to indict him, or Merrick Garland said, let's indict him.
Let me ask you this, Mr. President.
They indicted their political opponent.
I just want to hear from you on this. I want to know what's in your head. When you go to bed at night, do you worry about going to jail?
No, I don't really. I don't even think about it. I'm built a little differently, I guess, because I have had people come up to me and say, how do you do it, sir? How do you do it?
Yeah, not just people who've come up to you. That was Meet the Press's host, Kristen Welker, asking you, how do you do it effectively? When you lay your pretty little head down at night, what happens? Are you worried about going to jail? No, there's nothing but, I'm built different, nothing but tumbleweeds up in here. But Senator, I wanna turn it to you because this stuck out, and we wanna play that full clip because after he says these are Biden indictments, right? Yeah. Biden was the one to do this. This was politically motivated. She doesn't stop him there. She immediately rolls into, but are you worried about going to jail? Right, there's no pushback. What did you make of that exchange?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, Trump is really good at capturing the moment. I mean, he's a master of it. Excuse me. You know, he did that all through when he was running in 2016 and also in 2020. But on the debate stage is where he does it the most. He overtalks people. And yeah, she should have said, wait a minute now, Mr. President, these are not the Biden indictments. That's not how the system works. And just going straight to, do you worry about going? Of course, he's not worried at all because he is the master of illusion. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how he does it either. I mean, that's serious because any other person would be brought to their knees based on being impeached twice, all of these indictments, maybe more to come. But this man is still operating like it's business as usual. You know why? Because he is in full control of the media for the most part, meaning his cachet, like who he is. He right. dominates earned media and he knows it. And he's like Pac-Man right now. I mean, he's just gobbling it all up. This is his element, Francesca, yes. really. I mean, he gets stronger when things like this happen to him.
I mean, I would agree. And especially when you have these interviews, the worst that could ever happen to Donald Trump is not getting a meet the press interview, is not getting the sit down, is not getting that phone call. I mean, I said this from the beginning, but the worst thing that could have ever have happened to Donald Trump, some people were like, oh no, Huffington Post ran his political campaign initially, remember in 2015 in the comedy entertainment section. I was like, no, keep doing that. Keep taking him non-seriously. That was the problem, is that everyone was like, oh, he's really gonna build a wall. No, not if you keep gassing him like that. Anyway, there's so much more from this interview. Maybe there's pushback, we'll see. This was a fun moment, given that Donald Trump is facing now confirmed 4 indictments, 91 charges. And a lot of the people who've been indicted are also his co-conspirators, his former lawyers that he has to get, again, newer armies of lawyers to help him out on because they've all been burned. Here he is talking about those lawyers and whether or not it was them whose advice he followed or his own instinct, as it is put.
You called some of your outside lawyers. You said they had crazy theories. Why were you listening to them? Were you listening to them because they were telling you what you wanted to hear?
You know who I listened to myself? I saw what happened. I watched that election and I thought the election was over at 10 o'clock in the evening.
You were listening to your instincts.
My instincts are a big part of it. That's been the thing that's gotten me to where I am, my instincts. But I also listened to people. There are many lawyers. I could give you many books. There are books that are written on how the election was rigged. There are numerous books that were written on how the election was
rigged. Just to be clear, were you listening to your lawyer's advice or were you listening to your own instincts?
I was listening to different people. And when I added it all up, the election was rigged.
When I did the calculation in my tumbleweed brain, it was all rigged. I mean, I don't really know what this line of questioning is because we know that he's lying. She knows he's lying. He knows he's lying. He knows his lawyers told him to lie. Is she trying to give him an out or is she trying to nail him as yes, it was him who directed everybody? These are already the charges, for example, in Georgia. He was the helm of this massive racketeering scandal and scheme to defraud the American people. But again, this is him throwing them under the bus. That's not a good look, in my opinion. But he didn't fully, you know, some of them he says, oh, they're not really, you just get a recommendation, they're not really great. But ultimately, I listened to my own wonderful instinct. Nina, what else were we expecting him to say? Of course, he's gonna say his instinct is correct.
Yeah, no, nothing else. I mean, he was honest here. I don't know, I think Christian was trying to really get in his head, thinking if she takes the kind of soft, smooth, and I don't mean soft, I'm not trying to be negative, but just kind of velvet glove way that she might get him to say something that he wouldn't ordinarily say. Totally. The challenge is, this is Donald J. Trump. This is what he specializes in. And he was quite honest there. He said, hey, I listened to my instincts.
Right.
This is how I've gotten where I am today, my instincts. And guess what? He ain't lying. Now, had that been any other, like just pure mortal person, they'd be done for. But no, it's Donald J. Trump. He generates lots of clicks, he generates lots of media. I think we're gonna be talking about the man even when he's gone from this earth. He is going to continue to dominate conversation and he knows it. And then about books being written, I mean, anybody can write a book, Mr. President. Are those books, is there any truth in those books? You know And I know, he knows, his team knows, there was nothing rigged about the 2020 election. He lost the election and it's too much for his fragile ego to take. So here we are with him doing it again in 2024. It is as simple as that.
Right. However, and this was fun because when the former president does get into specifics, he gets into a little bit of trouble. So I want to jump down. This is clip four because he says, oh, all I needed was X number of votes. But to what? To what? Take a look where he nearly admits that, yeah, he did lose the 2020 election.
When you say you needed 1/10 of a point.
One tenth of a point. I needed a very small. I think somebody said 22,000 votes.
To win?
Yeah. If you divided among the states, it was 22,000 votes, something to that effect. Yeah.
To win the election?
Yeah. If I would have had another 22,000 votes over the whole.
But
look, they rigged the election. If you look at Pennsylvania,
but Mr. President,
if you
you're
look
saying
at all
you needed
this stuff,
more votes to win the election, are you acknowledging
me,
you didn't
you
win?
If you look at all of the statistics, all of the votes, they say 22,000 votes over millions and millions of votes, 22,000 votes. So when they do Twitter files or when they have 51 intelligence agents come out and lie that the laptop from hell was Russia disinformation, and now they find out it's not, but they knew that at the time, they cheated on the election in that way too.
I just want to be clear though. Are you saying you needed those votes in order to win? Are you acknowledging you didn't win?
I'm not acknowledging. No, I say I won the election.
So close. So close. I'm not acknowledging. No, I say I won the election, even though I clearly didn't. There was a moment right in the middle of that clip where his brain is like, Mr. President, you need to stop right now. He's like, and he reroutes and he's like, I say it was rigged. Yeah, 22,000 to win. Oh, this is a fun moment. Although I think, Senator, to your point, he recorrects course. And then he also loved the gobbledygook in the middle. If they do Twitter files, they do the crazy laptop. Like, who are you talking about? And here's the thing, and look, we're talking about Joe Biden. Is he there? Is he not there? How is his mental capacity? I love how no one calls out Donald Trump when he says the laptop, the Twitter files, because don't you feel like we all kind of know what he's talking about generally? So we give him this like pass for clear senility. Anyway, Nina,
he does it so seamlessly though. I mean, he really does. He's mastered it. But I was thinking, as soon as he said the Twitter files, there was this show called The X-Files. Now, I wasn't a big watcher of that. I do know some people who were, but that you know, was coming to mind. Like, Twitter files, what are you talking about? This is not even a legitimate source. You're talking about the Twitter files. She almost had them. And that's why I think, Francesca, I got to give her a little credit there. You know, she velvet glove. She almost had him. She did. On that part of the interview, she did almost trip him up. But he is a pro. Again, it takes a lot to stump Donald Trump. And then once you do, he's just going to say you're out to get him. And an interview was rigged. I mean, everything is rigged. All he got to do is default to the factory setting. And the factory setting for Donald J. Trump, if things are not going his way, it was rigged and it's fake news. That's all. I mean, and once he does that, all is well.
The best part about Trump is he's been saying rigged. First of all, we all know he stole that from the Bernie Sanders movement, right?
Absolutely.
Like, even though Bernie himself, as you know, obviously didn't say the words rigged. I think everyone was talking about the DNC, talking about them superdelegates, right. He steals that and he calls the 2016 election rigged. I'm sure he said as soon as they were like knocking on his door to tell him the results of the election, he was like, it was rigged. Oh, I won. Oh, I won.
It was perfect.
It was great. But yeah, you're right. And she almost does have, this was a good moment. But
it was a good moment.
We understand though that it doesn't matter to his supporters that cognitive dissonance of saying all I needed was 22,000 votes, which by the way, untrue, a lie, and the election was rigged and I didn't actually lose. That's perfectly compatible in the minds of MAGA. Right? It doesn't actually, you don't need to say one or the other. That is within their cult. Perfectly, that's logic. Let's go to finally, and then we'll see, because there was some pushback from Kristen Welker. happened a lot later. But before we go there, I just want to play this last little moment because I agree with you that she's trying to Trump whisper. It's like she goes in this interview and she's like, ooh, I'm going to be the one to speak to his heart. I'm going to find his soul. I'm going to dig in there. And then just like every other interviewer digs a little bit and realizes this man, no soul, nothing going on. Take a look.
Now, as you just heard, former President Trump referred to the federal indictments against him as Biden indictments. The indictments have been charged by a special counsel, and according to the White House, President Biden has not spoken to the Attorney General about them, and the White House found out about them from news reports. As for the impeachment inquiry, so far, congressional investigators have not presented any evidence that President Biden has profited off of Hunter Biden's business dealings.
I meant to say this during the interview with Donald Trump himself. So that was her sort of covering her behind at the end. I wanted to, however, kick it to this. I was trying to set up this piece right here where she asks him kind of once again, like, when you look in the mirror, what do you think? What do you see yourself? What do you think?
Tell me what you see when you look at your mugshot.
I see somebody that loves this country in me. That loves this country. I see tremendous unfairness. I think very few people would have been able to handle what I handled.
I see a beautiful man, a perfect, wonderful guy. Look at how handsome, young, strapping, definitely 215 pounds, definitely 6'3". There he is again. Of course he was gonna say that. You know, what do we expect? I think that's also part of how these interviews happen, right? That this is the negotiation with the team, the Trump team, whoever is left of the Trump team, as if the media owes him anything at this point. It is, hey, you need to be semi-softball on me, right? Like, I'm not gonna do this interview with you. This was at Mar-a-Lago, by the way. She goes to him. He's not going anywhere. I mean, you know, he might be extradited if he leaves Florida. No, who knows what's gonna happen to him. But like, so that sort of gives you the flavor. Now, I have to say, I don't know what we expect from mainstream news, but it is very scary because it feels like we're treating him just like a guy who's had fallen on hard times. How is he gonna pick himself up? Does he know, does it hurt your heart to lie so much, Mr. President? And then you see that pushback again, only safely from the comfort of her studio where she can give the real facts. But in the moment, that fiery moment that we've seen so few of. And I think, again, Senator, I do think he reserves his sort of deepest disdain and a lot of talking over and interrupting for females, for women journalists, I think. So, you know, I'm thinking about Jonathan Swan, I believe from Axios, in that interview that he gave, Jonathan pushing back. It was like one of the very few times we've seen that. But any final thoughts on this and media as we move into this next election cycle?
Yeah, I mean, what do you see when you see a mugshot? He just should have said money, because that's exactly money. There's a song.
Yeah, great t-shirt.
A lot better. I mean, that's exactly what he saw. Him and his team definitely manipulated, or can we say utilized that moment and raised a lot of money, over $7 million. I don't know what the final number was, but it was upwards past 7 million. So money. I think also, Francesca, the populist nature of Donald J. Trump, we can critique him. He is a neo-fascist. He's not good for this country. And like multiple things can be true at once. There's a populist nature to his persona. Mm-hmm. And he really, really laser focuses on that. So it's kind of hard to get him to maneuver any other way, because if he's a populist, then even though he's a wrong populist, that populism take from him works. And then lastly, the media makes so much money. Your point about why does the media continue to do it? Because the media itself needs Donald J. Trump. Those are the facts. Yep. They need him to make money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everyone is working it. Look, I think it's important that we do continue to cover how the media is covering him. If we got the opportunity to sit down with Donald Trump, you would not see this from us, I guarantee you. But it is interesting that still at this late stage, they're doing this pay to play. They're softballing him, except for that one moment, which was still done with a smile. Are you sure you didn't lose that?
But she was crying, Francesca. I think she was trying. She was on to something. I really do.
Look, it's like the first week on the job in terms of Kristen Welker standing in for Chuck Todd. And I, for one, am grateful it is her and not Chuck Todd.
I like her a lot and I want to give her a chance. You know, that's hard.
Sure.
Me nominated that particular show and she gets the chance to show us what she has. Donald Trump is a hard first interview for anybody.
Indeed. Really. Indeed. All right, well, let's move on to a break. Quick break. BRB, don't go anywhere. Speaking of age being just a number, we're gonna open with our UAW segment and opening it with this and this man.
It is time for you to end your greed. It is time for you to treat your employees with the respect and dignity they deserve. It is time to sit down and negotiate a fair contract.
That was Senator Bernie Sanders in Detroit at a UAW rally because they are on strike. That is right. Targeted strikes, very particular strikes in just a few facilities, just three actually. But it's already enough to do the damage. And man, oh man, if they use the full force, automakers and union workers, or union workers are gonna make their automaker bosses very, very sad. And they're already seeing their stock prices plummet, and that's all they care about anyway, which is probably the problem here. But let's talk about UAW President Sean Fain, who announced that workers at a GM plant in Wentzville, Missouri, a Stellantis plant in Toledo, and a Ford plant in Wayne, Michigan would be going on strike. So workers walked off the job there, picketing outside the plants on Friday morning. It is limited. But again, according to one, I guess the global head of automotive for Global Data, an industry consultant, said that actually they could shut down three quarters of the US assembly plants just by a few of these targeted strikes, just by a few walk-offs. One advantage of a targeted strike for the union is the potential to save resources and extend the possible walkout. Striking union members are eligible for $500 a week from the union's strike fund. So again, trying to a little bit like flex muscle without going full throttle just yet. It is absolutely a tactic and it's good that there are strike funds. That's why unions exist in part, right? That's why dues exist, so that if there is a strike that people can still get paid from that union strike fund. So again, there's 145,000 UAW members. If they were all to strike at the same time, we're talking $70 million a week. That's how much it could cost. It would also drain their own funds. So it's touch and go here. I mean, I want to get into specifics about what they're asking for, Senator, but the union also doesn't have the luxury of just striking outright because it is a lot of money for them to be supporting their own workers. So I'm curious how that will play out politically, or not politically, but sort of with these automakers.
I mean, thank God for President Sean Fain and the members who believe in him. One of the things we want to remind our viewers is that when workers go out on strike, they are taking a big risk and they are losing. They are not being paid their full wages or benefits or any of that. Once they do decide to use the best tool that they have in their toolbox, I mean, that means their backs are totally up against the wall. This is, of course, a last resort. And I think sometimes, especially in the age of social media, Francesca, we can forget because people are out there trying to be of good spirits, trying to bring good energy. And I just want to remind all of us, myself included, that does not mean that this is a walk in a park and this is the kind of party they wanted to throw. They didn't want to throw this kind of party. They are really putting their family and their livelihoods at risk. And let us not forget, in 2008, at least I'm old enough to remember, we bailed out the damn banks. All right, I hope some people rocking with us today remember that. We bailed out, we meaning the taxpayers, bailed out, excuse me, the auto industry. Hell, we bailed out the banks too, y'all. So that's a whole nother story. I put that one in the parking lot. We bailed out the auto industry. They begged us to bail them out. But yet and still, they are making record profits. having stock buybacks, Franny, as you laid out, but yet unwilling to share that wealth with the people who helped them make it. Like, there's something immoral about this. And definitely, to quote Andrew Yang, the math ain't math. And that's one of my favorite quotes from Andrew Yang. The math is not math in here. So I'm so glad that President Fain is saying we want a 40-something percent pay increase.
Yes.
We want, you know, CEOs make 399 times the wealth of the average worker. And for what? These companies wouldn't be where they are. The big three wouldn't be where they are right now today without those workers. And then, friend, the point that you made about their strike fund, that strike fund has about $785 million in it. But as you laid it out, if they had to pay, you know, subsidize, because they can't even pay full salaries for all of their workers, that strike fund, while $785 million is a lot of money, once you start having to use it for over 145,000 workers, it goes very, very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see, you know, like, let's get into actually what they're asking for. Like you mentioned, that 40%. And I don't think this is the same as, you know, SAG and WGA, right? I hope automakers have a lot more sense than the AMPTP. But let's look at it, you know, because it is worth holding out for when it comes to these workers. What are they asking? They want that 40% wage hike over 4 years, amounting to 46% compounded, along with the cost of living increases, beefed up retirement benefits, including pensions on par with what auto workers previously received, and full pay for a shortened 32-hour work week down from 40. I love that. Nina snapping in the background, so we're on board. All three companies say that they're now offering, so already 20% raise during the life of the contract with a 10% raise at the start. The union started with the demand for an immediate 20% and four additional raises of 5% each year over the course of a 4-year deal. So they're trying to come a little bit to the table, but mind you, they're very late on this, okay? The demands they received weeks and weeks ago, I think about 6 weeks ago is when the automakers received these demands. So now they're meeting them, and they're literally only meeting them just half of what they're demanding. So, which sounds halfway, but let's talk about how much money these companies have been making. So you know that because they're paying their executives crazy money. UAW has pointed to three big three executives' pay in demanding higher pay for its workers. For example, GM chief Mary Barra's compensation grew by 32.5% from 2018 to 2022, prime pandemic. She gets over 30% wage increase, salary increase. During the same period, the median GM employee's pay grew by 2.8%, public filings show. So there you go. This is absolutely absurd. And again, the pandemic is being blamed in terms of, oh, workers don't want to work anymore. No. Workers understand the value of their work more so than ever. I mean, then UAW, obviously, this is already a unionized workforce. So now they're flexing. They know they can flex and they want to flex. And they know that it's going to enact some costs on these automakers. So GM and Ford stand to lose $2.5 billion and $3 billion in revenue, respectively, for each week a widespread strike lasts. Goldman Sachs Equity Research previously estimated, of course, that's again, they're the ones in control of the, you know, all the stocks. They're worried about the stock money and the stock price. By comparison, agreeing to a 40% wage bump for UAW members would cost General Motors $4 billion to $5 billion and for Ford $5 billion to $6 billion over 4 years. So weekly, each week losing $2.5 billion, $3 billion, or 4 years, doling out $5 billion, doling out $6 billion.
Auto companies have seen record profits, including the last few years, because of the extraordinary skill and sacrifices of the UAW workers. But those record profits have not been shared fairly, in my view, with those workers.
So they've not been shared fairly. The other thing that President Biden did was pretty big move, sending a White House advisor, Gene Sperling, also acting Labor Secretary Julie Sue, to Detroit to help reach a deal. That's a huge move coming from the executive branch. Sue and Sperling's goal was not to serve as mediators or intervene, but to help support the negotiations in any way the parties feel is constructive, which is interesting, right? They're not trying to put the squeeze on one or the other, but just sort of there saying they're watching. And Senator, to your point earlier, another president weighed in, former president, about this strike. Barack Obama, who oversaw that massive bailout of the automakers. And he writes on Twitter, 14 years ago when the big three automakers were struggling to stay afloat, my administration and the American people stepped in to support them. So did the auto workers in the UAW who sacrificed pay and benefits to help the companies get back on their feet. Now that car makers are enjoying robust profits, it's time to do right by those same workers so the industry can emerge more united and competitive than ever. Now, it is true, they did make concessions, but it's also when that happened, and I don't know if you remember, the narrative was we have to do this. This is the backbone of America. But the workers are the backbone of what is the backbone of America, not Mary Barra and like her record profits and her record, you know, salaries. So it's interesting because you could almost see it then that this moment was going to come later. But I thought, Senator.
Yeah, I mean, they could have at least minimally, I mean, the UAW is asking for 40%. They could have at least offered them that 32% that she received, just minimally. Right. I mean, they should get their 40, but if they really wanted to play ball, they could say, we're gonna offer your workers what Mary got in percentage, but they won't do that. As for President Biden, you know, look, I'm glad that he has finally said something. I mean, he went from praising the CEOs of these auto companies to finally saying, telling us what we already know. So I'm not cutting a lot of slack on that. And then for President Obama, pretty much the same thing. Let's see them both get out on the picket line with these workers. Yes. Really shake it up. Let's see them, let's hear reports of how they called the automakers in, not sending folks under them to go have these conversations, but they calling them in, asking them, what in the hell are you doing? You are hurting working class people in this country. And as Senator Bernie Sanders once said, since we're gonna have class warfare, it's time for the working class to be able to win that. And then Francesca, there's one thing about that, how President Fain really put this in perspective. He said the cost of labor that goes into a vehicle is 5% of the vehicle. They could double our wages, and they could not raise the price of vehicles, and they could still make billions of dollars. Now, this is coming from President Fain about what would happen to the big three if they shared the earned wealth with these workers, because they're not asking for anything that they don't deserve for the people in the cheap seats. Because, Franny, it burns my behind. And I want to say something else, but I know it's a PG show. It burns my behind to have so many people, especially on social media. Well, dag, what do you expect them to do? And you know, how you lining up behind the billionaire class? Why are you not lining up behind your sisters and brothers and family and friends who are actually making these vehicles? They are just like us. And guess what? Ununionized workers or non-unionized workers benefit when unionized workers put it on the line. All yes. workers benefit from yes. them making this demand. But there's some geniuses out there who feel as though workers are asking for too much, but they are okay with people like Mary and others making obscene amounts of money, whether the company does well or not. Because when the company is not doing well, workers get laid off. When the company is doing well, workers don't get to reap in the benefits. What in the unholy hell?
Yeah, no, exactly. And look, we're seeing all this strike activity and union activity, but we have to remember that unionization in this country is still on the decline, sadly. And yet, it's so important to have leaders, not just Bernie Sanders, obviously, but people like President Sean Fain, who are having these just incredible viral moments in the media and saying, calling out the consumers, like you just read, right? Yeah. We can actually support the consumers by not raising the price on you all. We understand we're each on either side of this getting screwed over by corporations and also by these shareholders. And the idea that, you know, it's not about not making things anymore. It's about only making wealth for shareholders and the top 1%, right? Like that's what it is. We can, if we did away with the middlemen trying to make money off everyone's backs, we'd all be good. We'd be good. Let's take our second break right now, if that's cool. Come back and do a lot more.
Our lawyers, the board of managers presented overwhelming evidence that Ken Paxton is the most corrupt politician in the state of Texas at this time. And the Republicans in the Texas Senate just returned him to the office of top cop. God help us.
Strong and very true words from Representative Ann Johnson of Texas about the acquittal, full acquittal of Attorney General Ken Paxton on 16 charges he was facing, including bribery, abdication of duty, misapplication of public resources, obstruction of justice. The trial was a showcase of both sober testimony and occasional spectacle. This is a summary according to the AP. In accusing Paxton of abusing his office, former advisors recounted how Texas's top lawyer allegedly pressured them to help a political donor who was under FBI investigation. Testimony included arguments over who paid for home renovations, whether Paxton used burner phones, and how his alleged extramarital affair became a strain on the office. Just wild abuse of power. However, the impeachment managers didn't get more than 2 of the 9 Republican senator votes they needed to pass any individual impeachment charge. In other words, he evaded all 16 of them. He has a statement in which he has the audacity to thank his wife, which is real fun when you're using burner phones to call your mistress. But I digress. Just a couple of choice moments from this statement. He says, "The sham impeachment coordinated by the Biden administration with liberal House Speaker Dade Phelan, who by the way is a Republican, and his kangaroo court has cost taxpayers millions of dollars, disrupted the work of the Office of Attorney General, and left a dark and permanent stain on the Texas House. I will next address the nation and Texas on Tucker Carlson next week. Now it is back to work." On X, Tucker on X. So, we're blaming Joe Biden and another Republican. Remember, this was one of the outlier instances where Republicans are actually trying to hold their own accountable. That's how you know how bad the corruption was. But Nina, your thoughts on this?
I mean, that clip that you showed said it all. We should all be outraged. I'm glad that the Republicans in that state decided to try to hold this man accountable. He is shameless. He knows that this was done by Republican leadership, this the whole trial, everything about it. But yet, I guess he must have called up President Donald J. Trump and he said, if all else fails, blame Biden. Because this is exactly what this dude did. In terms of abuse of office and the influence, selling influence, that is really what politics has come to, unfortunately, in the United States of America. There's always been a tinge of that. And I think the American people accept it to a certain degree, even though I don't think that we should. But the reality is, when you talk to people, Francesca, they say, oh, you know, politics is dirty. So there's a little bit of, oh, we're gonna accept a little dirt. I don't think we should accept any. But when it comes to this level of proof, really, Republicans, y'all let this dude just trollop back right back on into the office without any consequence. Now, as for his extramarital affair, that's between him and his wife and his God, if he believes in one. That part doesn't move me as much as how he has really messed up the record. But he really has messed up on the job and done a disservice to the people of his state. And he should have some shame, but he has none. And so now he walking around like he the victim. You see how they do that? Now, but he's the victim. He's been put upon selling influence, getting things based on your office at the expense of the taxpayer. He is corrupt as the day is long. And hopefully the Republicans, Francesco, will find somebody to run against him the next election cycle. They should be working on that. I'm not sure if this is his last, but they should make sure he doesn't get to that office again.
I mean, it is just kind of incredible that he is calling Biden, making Biden responsible, and that ironically, Republicans federally are trying to impeach Biden over one, like 28th, one sliver of the crimes that Ken Paxton absolutely has been accused of. He himself, not Ken Paxton's son. Now imagine if this were Ken Paxton's son got a job on the board of some oil company and he was on the phone while he talked to the, and there was, his son got money. Would that even be a story, people? Would that ever be a story? No, it wouldn't. And yet here we are with Hunter Biden. Ken Paxton has way more than that. In terms of trying to get an FBI inquiry dropped on a political donor. I mean, this is just, it's so dirty. And however, he may actually face some music. We'll see, because he still faces felony securities fraud charges that remain under a separate FBI investigation and is in jeopardy of losing his ability to practice law in Texas. He can still be elected because of his baseless attempts to overturn the 2020 election. So I guess there's some repercussions there. It also is important, let's jump down to graphic 6. It's important to know that they're coming for the Republicans who came for Ken Paxton, even though a lot of them understand that there was overwhelming evidence. So Speaker Dade Phelan and his leadership team, this is from the chair of the Republican Party in Texas, should be embarrassed for putting Texas through the time and expense of this political sham of an impeachment. We invite the House Republican caucus to choose leadership moving forward who will unify a Republican coalition behind our common goals instead of sharing power with Democrats. In other words, we want more of a loyalist. We want someone who will turn their cheek or their head when they see open corruption. We just want more people to respect the mob boss that we will all sort of live in fear of. Anyway, let's move on to this because there was a summit over the weekend. You know, now that Republicans have delivered everything they promised to the evangelical right, like overturning Roe v. Wade, you'd think they'd be talking a lot about their victories. You might think again on that one, because it turns out it's not as popular as they thought it would be. And that was on display actually over the weekend at the Family Research Council's Pray Vote Stand Summit, which began on Friday. Top Republican candidates for 2024 who were there have trod carefully on abortion at the Family Research Council's Pray Vote Stand Summit. The tech entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy did not mention the word at all. Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, cited his state's 6-week abortion ban in a single sentence. And only Mike Pence, good old Christian nationalist, the devout former vice president, unambiguously committed to a 15-week national standard. In other words, a federal ban on abortion. Trump, interestingly, because he is a bad liar, said something kind of honest. He said, quote, "I will say politically, it's very tough. It's a very tough decision for some people, but very hard on elections. Very, very hard. We had midterms and this was an issue," this meaning Roe v. Wade. "You know, now we can win elections on this issue, but it's very delicate and explaining it properly is extremely important. Many politicians who are pro-life do not know how to properly discuss this topic, which is important to the people in this room. So important to millions and millions of people in our country." So he's kind of saying the thing, backing away from the thing, saying the thing. But look at the polling. 80% of Americans oppose a federal abortion ban, 65% of Republicans, and 83% of independents. And to say nothing of 70% of Americans who support Roe v. Wade. Before I kick it to you, Senator, I just want to look at, this is very interesting because the question is, how many religious Republicans are there left? How religious are people, right? So this is some interesting polling. In 2016, actually, just 39% of Republican voters attended church less than once a year. In comparison, just 36% said they attended religious services at least once a week. But then that has shifted a lot. Low attending Republicans remain a crucial voting block for any candidate. So I don't go to church, but I say I'm religious. Who want to be, they're a crucial voting block. Their numbers are growing. 44% of Republicans attended less than once a year in late 2020, and an increase of 5 points since Trump's first bid for the White House in 2016. Over the same period, the percentage of frequent churchgoers has been in decline. In 2008, 44% of Republicans reported they were in church at least once a week. But by 2022, that number slipped just to 35%. In comparison, the share of Democrats who attended weekly only declined 5 percentage points during the same period. So a bigger drop in the number of Republicans attending church weekly than Democrats. Very interesting, not the same numbers, right? You got 18% versus 35%, but a bigger drop. I guess I'm just curious, Senator, your thoughts on like just how fake some of this religiosity has truly become in the Republican Party.
Well, Francesca, as a church girl myself, I don't know as I don't know if I would couple going to church with how religious or spiritual one is. We know that COVID certainly changed patterns. I mean, the data you read, it seems that the pattern was changing even before COVID, but COVID definitely exacerbated the way that we respond in many avenues of our lives. That's from working more at home to, hey, I'm just gonna catch the gospel. I'm gonna do what we call in my community bedside Baptist. Turn the preacher on my phone or on my computer, you know. And so that pattern is real. And even though Democrats seem to be going to church a little more, there's still some fall off about who physically goes to the church. My other observation is, you know, what would Jesus do? I mean, maybe they don't want lightning bolts striking the church, so they just decide to maybe stay out of it on the lighter side. But this voting bloc is not going anywhere. They are still just as powerful as they ever were, whether or not they congregate inside a traditional church building or not. Republican Party is still going to bend to their will.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, you know, that some of the people who were attending the summit said it wasn't. Let's just jump down to this. I think Graphic 8 says it well. They were not really swayed necessarily by Roe v. Wade and their understanding of the rest of the country. Michael Case from Beltsville, Maryland said, I want the candidate that's gonna win. I'm very focused on winning this year. So if I had to pick this second, I would pick Trump. I'm still against abortion, but you gotta recognize there are a lot of people who have a different view. And so we need to turn their hearts and minds, and that takes a little time. It's okay to be a little bit pragmatic and win. So again, a little bit of acknowledgement that the majority of the country is not on board with overturning abortion rights. And you're totally right about attendance and religiosity. I just think it's funny to point out, but no, it's true. You can still have your own private moment with your own private God. Let's move to this real quick. Let's see if we can do this. Look, we know America loves defending private property, and that's getting very real in California, an attempt to clamp down on what are called smash and grab retail thefts. It's just a large scale shoplifting. People steal en masse, designer clothing, jewelry, and all that. So California has taken this to heart. I wish they would take Medicare for All to heart, but hey, Gavin Newsom can only do certain things for certain donors. So California is gonna spend $267 million to help dozens of local law enforcement agencies increase patrols, buy surveillance equipment, conduct other activities aimed at cracking down on smash and grab robberies happening around the state. What is it gonna be used for? Investigative units, foot patrol, advanced surveillance technology, cracking down on vehicle and catalytic converter theft, maybe the only one that I'm with, cause I'm like, I got a Prius and I really don't want that thing to get stolen. The money would also help fund units in the DA's offices dedicated to prosecuting these crimes. Now, I just wanna jump down to some Graphic 5, let's just be real about the fact that retail theft is not a massive issue so much as just generally retailers are losing money. They're deciding to clamp down on this now. This has existed. Retail theft has existed for a long time. Organized retail crime is just one of the components of retailers' inventory losses. It's not the largest. It's the lower percentage of overall shrink than it was 5 years ago, according to the NRF surveys. That's a National Retail Federation that estimates that organized retail crime costs companies an average of just 7 cents for every $100 in sales. But like I said, Gavin Newsom has to deliver for, you know, corporations, honestly, in this state. I'll give my thoughts. I think this is a complete misuse of money. I think people need jobs, job training, access to education, and access to healthcare. If you want to clamp down on petty crimes like this, people are not losing their lives. Yes, there have been security guards that have been bear maced. I think that's awful and terrible, but this is not how I would use $267 in this state. Nina?
I mean, for me, I mean, I see it twofold. One is, are they investing other dollars, other places to edify the people of that state? So, and I think you've made that point. My other concern here is that, you know, people shouldn't be stealing though either. So you can't just let, and I've seen, I mean, that has happened in my hometown of the people who are in those malls are afraid. Those people are somebody's mother, somebody's sister, father, brother. Think about the employees too. If we want to think about employees who work in these facilities too. If the places keep getting hit, then they may close down and those workers lose their jobs. So I think this is a complex issue. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, are these people following the law? No, they're not following the law and something should be done. Now, they shouldn't be killed. You know, and that kind of thing, unless they're being violent. And there are some reports that some of them have been violent. Some of them have used weapons and you laid out the mace. Don't do that because the people who work in these facilities, they just trying to make a living like everybody else. And is Governor Newsom willing to invest more money on the more positive side of the ledger? And you named that number one variable, Medicare for all. So I always say multiple things can be true at once, and I don't want folks that are doing this scaring the hell out of people to just be able to get away with this stuff because it's not right.
Absolutely, I could go on about this, but we have run out of time for this hour of the show. There's more in the aftermath if you're on linear. Bye-bye. But again, if you're on YouTube, there are more stories, including our Monday Menace coming right up. Don't go anywhere. Hold on to your, you know what.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.